Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cock.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here! And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. Okay, it is Thursday, 12:44 a.m., either early Thursday or late Wednesday, however you want to put it. Hi, everybody. This is Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe radio show, and hopefully going to get this thing done on time for Thursday. I've been having trouble doing the Thursday shows lately simply because things get a little hectic and things get busy. I took Tuesday off, just took the day off from work. I wasn't really sick or anything, but I had just one of those days where I had no energy. Do you ever have a day like that where you just, even though you had a good night's sleep, and I did have a good night's sleep the night before, I just felt exhausted and was very tired, and I didn't really do much of anything all day. I mucked around on the computer for a little bit and watched a little TV. And, made out with my wife. You know, that was the most strenuous thing I did. Oh, I cooked dinner later on. But that was really it. I didn't do anything. And I hated to miss a day's work like that. But, you know, every now and then you feel the need to recharge your mental batteries, as it were. And that's really kind of what I needed. It had been a very stressful weekend. If you remember my last show about me trying to get my car taken care of. And it wound up actually costing me close to $700 to get this car fixed. And a lot of it was stuff that was necessary for me to get the car re-registered. Because here in Georgia, you have to pass an emissions test. And I had to get that taken care of. And it's an old car. It's like an 84 car. So, obviously, it needed some work in that, and the fuel lines were clogged up, and that was the most expensive thing to take care of. But that cost me $400. Getting a new alternator and getting all that installed and all that, the labor and everything, that cost me $226. And I had to pay $60 for a new battery when the thing stalled out because the alternator died, which is why it's so. Almost $700, about $680, and the car only cost me $600. However, she is running very well, much better than she had before, except there's a little squealing on the alternator fan belt or the alternator belt, and I'm going to go back to the shop and just get them to tighten that up. They better not charge me anything for that. They shouldn't. On Monday was my birthday and my wife's birthday. I'm 43. My wife is 45. Yes, we both have the same birthday. It's very strange, but it happens. It makes it easier to remember, that's for sure. Those are the one guy talking about one comedian was talking about the selective memories between men and women and how, you know, men can remember the batting average of every member of the 1978 Baltimore Orioles, the starting lineup, the batting averages, but they can't remember their anniversary or their wife's birthday, you know. And women, who could tell you exactly what outfits you were both wearing on your third date, cannot tell you how long the oil light in their car has been lit. You know, it's selective, you know. It's selective. But at any rate, my wife surprised me by coming up to visit me at work, and that was very nice. We had lunch together, nothing fancy, just some peanut butter and jelly. Because basically, the car work pretty much drained our savings and drained our bank account down to practically nothing. We're hoping we don't go into the negatives because we can't stand that. I can't stand that anyway. It's like $39 a pop, and I had to drain my savings account just to get enough money in the bank to cover the repair work that needed to be done. I honestly didn't expect to spend as much money as I did, and I really couldn't afford it. They delayed the charging of the card until today so that I can, have enough money in the bank. I can get another paycheck on it. But still. And, of course, I missed a day of work yesterday, which means I'm going to get a slightly smaller paycheck next week, and I'm going to miss 2 days next week because that's when I have my little surgery done. No, it's not really surgery. It's they're going to take a polyp out of my stomach. So that's going to sideline me for 2 days. So I'm only going to get paid for 3 days because I'm going to work Wednesday, and I work I get holiday pay for Thursday and Friday because it's Thanksgiving. And I got to go out and buy a turkey. That's another thing I got to do. Now, my wife got $50 from her parents, so we're going to use part of that to buy some Thanksgiving stuff. And I'd like to cook. I'm a decent cook. My wife will tell you that. And I like cooking turkey in particular. I really like turkey. It's one of those things that I like to have year-round. Every now and then I'll go and get some turkey legs or some turkey wings, which are just as good, and just bake them up, and I'll have them as leftovers and whatnot. But I like baking a whole turkey. Well, that wasted 5 minutes. You know, when you do a show by yourself and you don't have anybody to talk to, sometimes you just have to kind of ramble on, you know, and you have subjects that you want to talk about, but it's always better when you have someone to talk to. I haven't done an interview in a long time, and I really do need to have another interview done. I was going through the blogs, my usual blogs the other day. I read almost in order, Atrios, I read Daily Kos, then I'll read Juan Cole. Actually, I'll read Digby or Hullabaloo. Then I'll read Bart Kopp, and I'll read Juan Cole. I don't read The Right Christians that much anymore. I keep it up there because I'm too lazy to change the website. But I don't really read The Right Christians anymore since the founder basically gave it up to other people. It hasn't been quite the same. And it kind of embarrassed me. Not embarrassed, that's not the right word. It kind of bothered me that he left simply because he felt like he was getting into a feud with Atrios over comments on Atrios' blog concerning religious people. And, you know, despite what you might be told, the right does not have a monopoly on religion in this country. You know, a lot of Democrats, a lot of left-leaning people, you know, they're very, very religious in their own way. A lot of them don't necessarily wear it on their shoulders, and that's my biggest beef with a lot of religious people. You know, they wear it on their sleeve. That's all they talk about. It's kind of like being with somebody who's on a diet. You ever be with someone who's on a diet? That's all they can fucking talk about is their diet. That's all they can talk about. It drives you crazy. Look, I'm not on a diet. I'll have 3 sausage sandwiches and a pound of chili. And I'll have 6 beers to wash it down with. Just shut the fuck up about your cottage cheese already. Christ almighty. You know, I really hate people who just that's their whole life, you know? That's whatever, whether it's a diet or their religion or, you know, and some people in sports. We have people at work who will talk about absolutely nothing but sports all the time. Non-stop. And I can talk about sports as well as the next guy. You want to talk baseball or football or basketball or hockey with me, I can speak from fairly well-educated, from a fairly well-educated point of view about each of these sports. I've been a baseball fan since, God, as long as I can remember. I know as much about football as anybody who hasn't actually played the game or isn't, you know, a professional in the field. Okay, maybe there are a lot of fans that know a lot more specifics, but I know, you know, basically, you know, how the game works and all that stuff. And, you know, I've been a fan for a long time, and I understand what goes on. Same with basketball and hockey, you know. But some people, that's all they talk about. It's like, look, there's other things going on. There's politics, there's religion, there's science, there's this and that, and this and that, and that, and this. But anyway, back to my original point, and as usual, I digress all over the place. But that's all. You know, it's my fucking show, and I'll digress when I want. Thank you very much. My wife has given me that look. Stop cursing! What's wrong with you? You can put someone's eye out with that curse, you know. Yes, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, put someone's eye out, oh. Anyway, I was reading Digby, Hullabaloo. It's his blog, but it's digbysblog.blogspot.com. Just look it up on the friggin' website. You'll see. And he had a thing called Think Big. And they were, you know, it's the ongoing discussion about which democratic values we can safely get rid of so that we can get the racist cocksuckers of the South to vote for us a little bit more. And, you know, he went through a whole thing about the 10 constitutional amendments that constitute our Bill of Rights. So I was looking at that. So look. What we really need, if we're going to go this route, what we really need is to ditch the entire idea of self-rule altogether. And that, you know, that is the basis of the Constitution to begin with. Why do you think they have all those checks and balances set in the Constitution and the rights? Because it assumes that the government is there to serve the people and not the other way around. So when you start with the premise, like the slave state people do, and I live in a slave state, that when you start with the premise that some people are just naturally, by birth or whatever, better than other people, then you don't really need this pesky Bill of Rights to begin with. You know, even in, you know, our democracy, our democratic republic, your rights are limited anyway. I mean, you look at our history, anybody who gets powerful enough to disrupt the real powers that be, whoever they might be, if you're talking about business leaders and the corrupt politicians that are in their pockets, you know, they get taken out either directly, you know, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, or politically, Carter, Clinton, Gore, and Kerry. All of them were basically destroyed politically, political assassination, not physical, but political. And if you listen to my nemesis Beach on monarchies, which is what he is in favor of, lasts longer than democracies anyway. So we might as well revert to one while we have the chance, right? You know, and since the Bush family is currently embodying everything that is America, because to be against Bush is to be against America. I've got my heavy sarcasm mode on, by the way, just so you know. Just so you know. You know, we can make the new laws easy. Whatever they say goes. That's the new laws. Until, that is, the next family comes along and deposes them. Then it's whatever they say goes. See how easy? No fuss, no muss. That's what God wants anyway, so there's nothing you can do about it. Because, you know, in monarchies, that's where the kings get their power. At least that's where they say they get their power. That God gave them the right to be king. You know, that's how it works. So there's nothing you can do about it. It has nothing to do with the fact that generally, unless, you know, there's a peaceful transition between father and son or whatnot, that people get to be kings and queens by killing other people who were kings and queens and slaughtering their families as well. It's a time-proven traditional value of monarchy societies, monarchic societies. And hey, this would work just fine. I mean, as I mentioned, I live in Georgia, which is a big slave state. And despite all the rednecks talk about freedoms and rights, a monarchy, they would love that. They would love that. They don't want the trouble of governing themselves. The only thing they want government for is to use it as a tool to get rid of the people that they don't like and to get rid of ideas that trouble them, like science. Science really fucks them up. So, you know, let's not just tweak the Bill of Rights. Let's not just do that little bit. Let's dump the whole Constitution so we can get back to business. If all the homos and all the blacks and if the liberals don't like it, hey, you know, you can be killed. And that's the way the world is, bub. That's the way the world is. You know, it's easy to get sarcastic and say stuff like that. As a liberal, I value the rule of law. I value work. And I believe that hard work should be rewarded. Just as I believe criminal acts should be punished. And white-collar crime as well as blue-collar crime. And I believe in the social contract. I disagree with Jefferson and the writers of the Declaration of Independence when they say that there are all our rights are inalienable. There is no such thing as an inalienable right, ladies and gentlemen. A right that is given can be taken away. That's been proven time and time again. You have exactly as many rights as you are willing to stand up and fight for. And that's the plain truth. You can argue about inalienable rights from a philosophical point of view, from the point of view of we were born with these rights and they get taken away from us. But the reality of the situation is that we can have any of our rights taken away from us. And a lot of people give these rights away freely. They freely give these rights away. And that's it. You know? That's just the way it is. Anyway, let's take a little break. We'll have some stuff. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is that you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship, a self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up, will you? Shut up!
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me?
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup O' Joe radio show.
And welcome back to the Cup O' Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And it is 1:33 a.m. now, early Thursday morning or late Wednesday evening, however you want to look at it. And another one of the blogs that I read regularly and that a lot of people read regularly is Daily Kos. And his last post before his two-week vacation, or one of his last posts before his two-week vacation, dealt with the new Europe and what's going on over there in terms of economics and in terms of worker quality and things like that. And the differences between the new European Union, which as a whole is a much larger trading sphere than the United States, and comparing it to the United States and what's going on there. And he quotes an article from Salon. And let me read some of that Salon article for you. It says, much of American productivity is accounted for by economic activity that might better be described as wasteful. Military spending, the endlessly expanding police and prison bureaucracies, the spiraling cost of healthcare, suburban sprawl, the fast food industry, and its inevitable corollary, the weight loss craze. Meaningful comparisons of living standards consistently favor the Europeans. In France, for instance, the work week is 35 hours, and most employees take 10 to 12 weeks off every year, factors that clearly depress their gross domestic product. Yet it takes a John Locke heart of stone to say that France is worse off as a nation for all that time people spend in the countryside downing the red wine and eating Camembert cheese with friends and family. European children are consistently better educated. The United States would rank 9th in the European Union in reading, 9th in scientific literacy, and 13th in math. 22% of American children grew up in poverty, which means that our country ranks 22nd out of the 23 industrialized nations, ahead of only Mexico and behind all 15 of the pre-2004 European Union countries. What's more horrifying, the statistic itself or the fact that no American politician to the right of Denis Kucinich would ever address it? Perhaps more surprisingly, European business has not been strangled by the European Union welfare state. In fact, quite the opposite is true. Europe has surpassed the United States in several high-tech and financial sectors, including wireless technology, grid computing, and the insurance industry. The EU has a higher proportion of small businesses than the United States, and their success rate is higher. American capitalists have begun to pay attention to all of this. In one book, Ford Motor Company chairman Bill Ford explains that the company's Volvo subsidiary is more profitable than its U.S. manufacturing operation, even though wages and benefits are significantly higher in Sweden. Government subsidized health care, child care, pensions, and other social supports, Ford says, more than make up the difference. Now, at home, meanwhile, according to Kos, the inmates are running the asylum. Freedom Fries is considered a weighty matter worthy of deliberation by the United States Congress. Regulating who people can love is considered a matter of national security and a greater danger than terrorism, say the Republicans. Our foreign policy is run on arrogance, while Europe earns international loyalty through a much more generous and benign foreign assistance budget. And a shoot now, ask questions later mentality pervades our government and the majority of U.S. voters. Intellectualism is considered weakness. Ignorance is celebrated. Now, of course, this is not entirely true to a certain extent. I mean, certainly there are 49% of Americans, of at least the voting public, who are thinking people. At least those of us out here on the left who want to see things in a more complex point of view and who look at the right wing as just a bunch of reactionary bigots, we certainly don't feel like we're stupid. And there is a considerable difference between the free states and the slave states as far as education is concerned. There are much better educated, for example, in New York City than they are in Macon, Georgia. You know, a lot of times what happens with these test scores and stuff like that, like what happened in Texas under Governor Bush, was that the teachers basically teach to the test and they don't really teach what needs to be taught, or they don't need to be, you know, they don't really bother educating the children. They're just trying to get their numbers up as far as grade-wide on the tests are concerned so that they can collect their federal money or their state money. Hang on a second. Let me push this. Let me eject this disc here. And that's basically the way it is in a lot of the slave states. They work towards a test, and they take measures to increase the scores of the test in any way they possibly can to make themselves look good. But the fact of the matter is the education quality in the red states lags fairly far behind those in the free states. And it's really only that part of the country, the slave states, that is suffering the serious problems. Those of us who live in the cities, those of us who actually have contact with people of other cultures, of with black people, you know, and a lot, you know, you go to a lot of the slave state areas, the only contact they have with black people is, you know, their servants in whatever way, shape, or form, you know, but there's certainly very little contact with other cultures and all that. If you go to a big city like Chicago or New York or even Atlanta, you're bound to find a lot of different cultures and a lot of different types of people, much more homosexuals, much more cultural, you know, all of those things that occur in big cities. The red state, blue state divide is just as much a matter of urban versus rural as it is a question of industrial versus agricultural or medieval versus progressive liberalism. And really, what a lot of what the slave states have is still this kind of medieval agrarian outlook on life, which is why, as I talked about in my last segment, why they would have no problem accepting either theocracy or a monarchy, or a theocratic monarchy in that sense. You know, Pat Robertson rules the world, although that's not bound to happen, mainly because, you know, most people wouldn't accept Pat Robertson anyway. But you can have somebody who is going to be a tool for Pat Robertson, that's certainly for sure, as Mr. Bush is certainly a tool for right-wing theologians and all that. Look, let's face facts, people. The Europeans get it. The Europeans get it. Centuries of warfare that did nobody any good have taught them a severe lesson. And yes, we helped to rebuild them after World War II. Under the Marshall Plan, and we did very well. You know, they talked about having a Marshall Plan for the Middle East, and if they had gone about it the right way, I might have been all for it. However, it was obvious, and especially when you're talking about Iraq, that the Bush administration in particular and the American government in general was only interested in its little cronyism. Halliburton, Bechtel, all these companies with close ties to people in the Bush administration were the only ones getting these contracts, often without a bid. In the Marshall Plan, it was the Germans who had a say-so in who got what contracts. We didn't, you know, Eisenhower and and Secretary of State Marshall did not go out and look for their buddies to see who could profit from the German reconstruction. And they gave the Germans and the Japanese later on, because the Marshall Plan was extended to them, or they had a different one for them. The Japanese were allowed to control much of their own destiny. You did not have any fights like we're having in Fallujah. Nothing like that happened in occupation Germany. In fact, I remember one guy telling me that, oh, you know, I'm not worried about in Iraq because that's what always happened. You know, we lost more guys in Germany, which was bullshit. We didn't lose 1,200 soldiers to enemy fighting in the occupation of Germany or Japan combined. As a matter of fact, the Japanese accepted occupation and they did not fight back the Americans. And in fact, admired General MacArthur, who I despise for different reasons, but in Japan he did a great job there. They admired him greatly and respected him. And, you know, the Japanese and the Germans to this day are our great allies. And in fact, the Japanese, you know, and I'm not saying that the Europeans and the Japanese are perfect. And certainly they did a lot of atrocities during the wars, and no one's denying that. But the fact of the matter is that the Japanese view us as being great friends now. And you wouldn't even think of them attacking America. And the Germans, you know, got the brunt of the Bush administration's, you know, hackles when they told us not to go to war with Iraq, or at least was telling us it was a mistake. And it's wrong to do that. It's funny, you know, the Pope was against that, but some Catholic friends I know think that the Pope is not Catholic enough. And they supported the war. If you're Catholic and the Pope says the war is wrong, maybe you should listen. Don't you think, honey, don't you think? If you're a Catholic and the Pope says the war is wrong, maybe you should at least give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, if you want to be a true Catholic in that sense. You know, I was raised Catholic. And I actually kind of like John Paul because, you know, he traveled a lot and he really does, you know, the Catholic Church, for all the people naysaying it, they do a lot more for poor people than a lot of the Protestant religions do. A lot of the Protestant religions would be more interested in sending people Bibles than food. The Catholic Church does a lot more for poor people. I'm not defending the Catholic Church. But the thing about it is that the Europeans get it and we don't. And we think we can go it all alone, and we think we can just do whatever the hell we want because of our military might. I don't know how many times I have to tell people our military might means next to nothing. I don't care how strong we are. Are we planning on killing everybody in the world that disagrees with us? You can't do that. Not without killing ourselves in the process. Are you willing to commit genocide and suicide at the same time? Just because we can? Because we have all these nukes? Do you think we could occupy France and Germany and the rest of the European Union? I don't think so. You know, look at all the trouble we're having in Iraq. And in case you hadn't noticed, we're getting our asses kicked in Iraq. Because it's not the kind of war that our soldiers were trained to fight. This is an occupation now. And they're just nice big old targets. Along with the Iraqi civilians who the suicide bombers want to go after. You know? I mean, I'm not defending what the car bombers and stuff do, but I understand to a certain extent. I mean, would any of us do anything much different if it was us being occupied? And when we talk about innocents being killed, did Timothy McVeigh think of the innocents that were in that in the Oklahoma City Federal Building when he bombed it? There were a lot of children in there that died. Did he seem to care about them? Not really. Their sacrifice for the greater good, and that was his basic attitude about it. So don't let us think we have the moral high ground here. And, of course, when you come right down to it, who invaded who? The European Union can take the United States out without a shot, people. They don't need to fire a shot. America relies a great deal on foreign investment. It's very important that we have a good trade policies and a good balance with trade between Europe and Asia. We've been borrowing money from China. Did you know that? We've been borrowing money from China to stay solvent. Now, don't hear a lot about that on the news, but it's been happening. And what if, you know, what if what happened in Argentina happens to us? It's a possibility. It's not as likely as it was in Argentina, but it's a possibility as our debt continues to grow. Paul Krugman talked about this in an interview. As our debt continues to grow, and if you know, because we have a history of being a fairly responsible nation fiscally, or at least finally, you know, when it gets down to the point where things look ridiculous, we're able to compromise and make the changes that need to be made. You know, if the nations who own our debt start to think otherwise, then we could be in serious trouble economically, and the dam could break. It won't happen overnight, but it could happen. The reason why the British lost the Revolutionary War was twofold. One, because the French came in on our side, and two, because they could not economically sustain an occupation army in the colonies. Just like we will not be able to economically sustain an occupation army in Iraq. And now, of course, and they've been doing it for a little while, but the drumbeats are going on to go after Iran. Iran has five times the population of Iraq. And while there are some students in there and there are people in there that want to be free and that like America and what it supposedly stands for, they will not stand for being invaded. And if you think Iraq has been a bloodbath and a difficult struggle so far, you ain't seen nothing yet. Yeah, our military could walk all over them in a few days, but then we become an occupying power. And you know what? If we go into Iran, we won't have anybody. Mr. Bush won't even have Poland going with us. In fact, Poland is pulling out of Iraq slowly but surely, along with a lot of our other allies. And in Great Britain, it's going to cost Tony Blair his job long before it's going to cost George Bush his job. And after the election, the U.S. dollar has taken a nosedive against the euro, which is, of course, the currency of the European Union. The euro has reached record highs against the dollar as foreign investors pull their money out of the United States. The Europeans get it, people. And in my former blog, I talked about what I call the Pax Liberalis, the free peace, as opposed to a Pax Americana or the Pax Romana, which is where, you know, the Romans basically through their military might and their political might controlled most of the free world and kept the peace, so to speak. But those peaces don't last. When you impose peace with an iron fist, it never lasts. The Pax Liberalis, when it comes, will be a truly free peace, because it'll be in peace imposed by ourselves and not imposed from without by a military power. It's coming. Whether we're talking about it's going to be a century or two centuries from now, it's still coming. And we had better be ready for it. Let's take another break. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once more, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And I was running around the blogosphere earlier today on several sites. There was talk about the latest Bush tax proposal and how it affects us as working people and how it doesn't affect the people who make money by having money or the people who make money by basically cheating on their taxes by moving corporations and stuff over to Bermuda and things like that. And it's a long, convoluted thing. And I've talked about this before to a certain extent, but let me get a little more into detail about it, because one of the things that I was led to was something from a transcript of an interview that was on Book Notes, which is what goes on C-SPAN from time to time. They kind of do that. They'll do the political stuff, but they'll also do Book Notes, is where the show where they have an author of a book will give a short speech or talk about the book that he has written. And one of them was from a guy named David K. Johnston, who wrote a book called Perfectly Legal, which is about basically how tax code is currently written in Congress to basically rip off us working people to benefit the very, very wealthy. Now, most of us assume that the people who are up on top pay more taxes as a percentage of their income. Mind you, they do pay more taxes as far as numbers are concerned, but only because they can afford a lot more. A guy making $10, $15 million a year pays a lot more in taxes, but then again, he can afford a lot more. And my challenge has always been, anybody who doesn't like the money and the taxes they pay on their money is perfectly willing to come and take my salary and pay my taxes, and I'll take their salary and pay their taxes. They can keep continuing to doing what they're doing, whatever the hell it is they do. Mostly, when people get that kind of money, they do it through either illegal or, little off-the-wall ways of manipulating the system to their benefit. Very few people, I can't think of anybody that really earns the kind of money that some of these people have. And we're not even talking about people like Bill Gates, who earned it because he knew how to market his system. We're talking about guys like Jack Welch, who are corporate CEOs who will take all the benefits of their company, and the value of the benefits that they have is worth more than their actual salary. And in some cases, they get to retire with these still same benefits. And Jack Welch, who was the chairman of General Electric, and which owns NBC, by the way. Hang on a second, I need a drink of water here. Which owns NBC. Even after he retired, he got the use of an apartment and of a corporate jet, things like that are worth millions of dollars unto themselves. I mean, when you combine them all the things, and he doesn't pay for them at all, despite the fact that he gets millions of a year in retirement money. And, of course, people like that never really retire. They're workaholics. You won't catch them, lazing around the house watching, Jerry Springer or whatever, And part of the problem is that so few of us really know and understand what goes on with taxation. I really don't. That sort of thing. All this money stuff just goes over my head. I mean, I can talk intelligently about a lot of different issues, but when people start talking about tax shelters and moving money here and moving money there, I just get, huh? Huh? What I understand is, here's $20. How much does a number four value meal at McDonald's cost? I understand that. And I understand that I make $13 an hour and that I pay too much taxes for what I earn. And what it all boils down to, in Mr. Johnston's book, and I'm going to try to get him so I can interview him myself, what it all basically boils down to is that guys like you and me, people who work regularly for a living, we are subsidizing guys like Jack Welch, because that money he gets from General Electric all basically gets paid off by their shareholders, but also by taxes, by the public, because what they do is they'll shelter it from the government, so it's not paid in taxes, and we wind up paying the bulk of what's left. Again, it's all more complicated than that. I'm trying to simplify it as much as possible, because basically I'm a simple guy. I don't understand a lot of this stuff, and frankly, it makes me prone to get ripped off by people because I just don't understand money. And my attitude is, let's just get some things done and let's do stuff. The system as it is right now in the American economics, and I can't speak for the rest of the world, but it seems to me pretty clearly that the system, the way it stands right now, in American politics, is in American economics, is that the people who are really making money are making money by gaming the system to their benefit. Back in my father's day, and I'm sure that some of this stuff was going on, you know, long before anyway. I mean, there's always been people trying to game the system for their benefit. But what happened with the New Deal is that it really changed the way a lot of the working class paid their taxes. And they actually wound up paying a lot less in taxes and getting a lot more in salary. In other words, they got real value for their work. And, you know, nowadays all that's been slowly taken away over the last 30 years, of course. And part of it was the infamous Sunpac Law, which I've mentioned barely from time to time, which was enacted in 1975. It was one of those laws, the campaign finance laws that was passed in the wake of Watergate. And basically what it said was it allowed corporations to both fund and create political action committees on their behalf using their own money. Corporations had been allowed to create political action committees beforehand. However, they were not allowed, until 1975, they were not allowed to use their own money. And the Sunpac decision in 75 changed all that. Before that decision, there were maybe 30 or 40 corporate political action committees. Within a year after it, there were thousands of them. And once that corporate money started to flood the political system, that's when everything really seriously started to change. And the New Deal changed all that from the way it was back in the 20s and before that, when you had the idea that not only should government stay out of business, but the government should really act as an agent to help big business get more money. And everybody was suffering. You know, and people are suffering now. I mean, I look at my landlord, and he works, God, he must work 60, 70 hours a week, easy. And he's always tired when he comes home, and he never has a chance to relax and enjoy the benefits of his hard work. And I just try to get by on 40 hours a week, and sometimes a little less than that. And I really barely get by. But quite frankly, I don't know if I have it in me to work 50 to 60 hours a week anymore. I didn't really have it in me to work 50 or 60 hours a week when I was 20 and 30. You know, and people say, well, that's just being lazy. But the truth of the matter is, back in my father's day, you could work 40 hours a week and still just get by. You know, I mean, you can not only get by, but you could save money. I mean, at $6.50 an hour, I've talked about this before, at $6.50 an hour, my dad managed to support an entire family of five. I make twice that, and I can't do that. Part of that is real estate, and the reason part of that is real estate and how much rents have gone up is because of taxes and taxation, and basically we're footing the bill for that. According to Mr. Johnson, he talks about the reality of our tax system and how it actually operates after the politicians pass the laws. According to him, the news media does a good job of telling you the official version of events and what politicians in Washington say about taxes, but he spends a lot of time in his career covering Washington without being there by paying attention to what government actually does as opposed to what the politicians say that it does. And this, of course, for the slave state people, why they vote for Republicans is because the Republicans tell them all the things that they want to hear, while in the meantime they got a knife in their hand and they're stabbing them in the back, is what they're basically doing. And people say, oh, thank you, sir, may I have another? You know, most people, according to Mr. Johnson, believe that the higher your income, the greater your share, the share of your income that you will pay in taxes, and that those who are the most successful provide benefits. Excuse me. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. I don't edit that shit out. I'm sorry. I don't edit that shit out. I sneeze, damn it. But anyway, what I was saying is those who are the most successful provide the benefits for those who don't do as well. And that's the myth. But what he shows in his book, again, the book's name's perfectly legal. Look it up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever. And what he shows in the book is something it was astonishing to learn. In fact, he said a graduate student in economics, and he should have hired somebody better than that. But the truth of the matter is that the middle class and the upper middle class, people making $50,000 to $500,000 a year, actually subsidize the richest people in America now. this didn't used to be true, but they do now. And about $50,000 a year is the equivalent of what my dad was making at $6.50 an hour, because rents were so low, because food was much lower. Like I said, I make twice what my dad made, but I'm paying 5 or 6 times more for rent. I'm paying 10 times more for your basic staples of food and things like that. I mean, things just cost a lot more, and salaries, hourly salaries in this country, have not kept pace with that. The people who make $50,000, $60,000 a year are the ones who are living like my dad used to live back then, raising a family of 5, because things were so much lower back then. And also, he was being less taxed as a percentage of his income. I wish I had one of my father's pay stubs so I can compare what he was paying in taxes and what I'm paying in taxes. And, you know, and I talked about this with the Bush, with the Bush supporters. I said, in 2000, I said, take a hold of one of your current pay stubs and hang on to it until 2004. And then take a pay stub from 2004 and compare it to what you were paying in 2000 in taxes. And ask yourself if you're paying any more or any less, or even how much more you're earning or less you're earning than you were before, and how much more or less taxes you're paying. If you're paying about the same in taxes, or you're not getting very much, if you're not getting a very much of a savings, or even in some cases you're paying a little more, as I'm sure it was happening with some people, and you continue to vote for Mr. Bush based upon the fact that, you know, he supposedly is going to lower your taxes, then you're an idiot. I mean, one of the guys at work where I work was an older guy who was sitting there talking, well, if Kerry's in, he's going to raise my taxes, and he would, you know, get all serious, you know, and he's throwing, oh, well, you know, I'm really close to getting to being a libertarian and all that because I don't know what the Republican, blah, 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 blah. But of course he voted for fucking Bush because Kerry was going to raise his taxes, even though there was no evidence that that was actually going to happen. And the Democrats are they can't do anything, because with the media the way it is, anytime the Democrats say anything that's a form of tax reform, which is going to include raising taxes on somebody, whether you're talking about the rich or the middle class, then the Republicans are going to scream that the Democrats are trying to raise taxes, when the Republicans sitting there trying to lower taxes. But, of course, where they're lowering taxes is for corporations and for people who make huge amounts of money, far more than you and I are ever going to see. Those are the people who are getting the tax breaks and the tax lowering and all that, and we're basically subsidizing them. And now one of the big things that's going on, and I've read about this on several blogs, is that one of the proposals, and again, I'm going to try to simplify it as much as possible, but basically the government wants another round of tax cuts for wealthy people, and they want to pay for it by eliminating tax breaks for companies who provide health care. In other words, one of the big reasons that some companies provide health care is because they get a big tax break from it. They have no incentive otherwise to present health care for their employees. If this tax thing goes through, and it probably will, then a lot more people are going to lose their health care because, you know, companies don't take the money that they save in taxes and put it back into the company for their employees, as far as that's concerned. They take the money and they shelter it away somewhere, or it goes to some CEO package like Jack Welch got. We're getting ripped off. We're getting ripped off. And it's funny how anybody who's a populist who tries to speak up for regular people gets panned off as an elitist. I'm not an elitist. You know, they talk about Michael Moore being a left-wing elitist. Jesus Christ, Michael Moore was just this regular, you know, working guy out in Flint, Michigan. You don't like Michael Moore, guess what, people? You created Michael Moore. You know, the reason why he became a celebrity was because he made one of the certainly a great documentary for a first feature film, but Roger and Me was a wonderful documentary that really just showcased the plight of the working class when Flint, Michigan decided to close up its longtime shop in the General Motors decided to close up its shop in Flint, Michigan and move it to Mexico so that they can pay Mexicans pennies compared to what we're making. And supposedly trying to say, and of course it benefits the executives of GE who are saving all this money and therefore making themselves look efficient. There's something wrong with all of this. There's something wrong with all of this. and the propaganda being spread on right-wing radio and professional news media who live in a bubble of their own, who have absolutely no clue what working people like me have to go through on a day-to-day basis, and the stress that we have in our lives just because we can't make ends meet, because every little thing like what went on with my car over the weekend, it's causing me close to $700, which I could not afford. I had to not pay the rent for those 2 weeks that I could have, I could have given that money to my landlord to help me get back caught up on rent. And we live in a world where our taxes are killing us. And the only people who are making real money are people who are gaming the system. And there are people like my sister and some of my cousins and other relatives who do a specific job and pay or get paid very well for it, and that's all fine and good. And they're making the kind of money that my dad used to make, but those hard jobs are harder and harder to get. You can't just walk into a factory and get those jobs. My sister didn't get the job that she has, which is she is an editor for a Newsday newspaper, only after years of suffering financially and going to other jobs and stuff like that. And the type of jobs that are like lower skilled or factory jobs, manufacturing jobs that used to be the heart and soul of this country, they've gone away. They've just gone away. And it's like with my shop. My shop is closing up parts of the plant and they're moving it all to Mexico. And they'll get Siemens will get big tax breaks. But the thing, Siemens is an interesting case because they're an international company. They're founded in Germany. And I talked about what the Europeans do, and the Europeans get it, and they understand, and they have many more benefits for their working people that the companies don't have to pay for. So even though the companies are paying more in salary, and of course, for vacation time and stuff like that, they make up for it by the fact that they don't have to deal with health care. We've got to change the tax system. I don't even have a clue of how to begin that, but we have to get back to doing what we were doing before. And I think we need to rethink our entire idea of economics. I mean, even Adam Smith, who was the founder of free market ideology economic theory, he understood that the people up on top have to pay more as a percentage. They pay what they can afford to pay. I really don't have an answer. Like I keep saying, I'm just a regular working class guy. All I know is that we're getting ripped off. I can't always put my finger on it, and I really don't understand a lot of where the tax code is and how things are going. I can't talk like an economics professor, and I really don't understand all this mumbo jumbo. But a lot of it is people making money by moving numbers from one column to another. A lot of people just making money by, extorting benefits from their companies. Big CEOs making lots of money basically by ripping people off. I mean, look at Enron, for Christ's sake. That's all they really did was rip people off. That's all they really did. And I just really don't have an answer. But we need to change something. And I think it's going to take some sort of major catastrophe happening or something like that, an entire economic collapse in some way, shape, or form, because the system can't continue like this. The imbalance is too much. I'm not jealous of rich people. I don't really, more power to them. People can make a lot of money. That's great. That's wonderful. I understand that kind of money is as much of a chain as it is a benefit, because you have to constantly watch over it. But, don't be ripping us off while you're at it. Let me live a comfortable life. Let me live the kind of life I want to live. And that's really the important thing to me. And that's what should be the important thing for most working people. You can do what you all want. That's fine. Just leave us be. Anyway, I see by the clock on the wall and by the fact that my throat is going that this is going to have to end this up. Again, this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show. And I will see you all on Sunday. Until then, bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO.
Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.